Welcome, everyone, to A Taste of Ink. This is your host, Celeste Duckworth, and as you know, A Taste of Ink is part of Vertical Life. This is the program that we interview some of these great authors that we're hearing about. Our intro music was done by Marcus Boyd, and our broadcast is sponsored by Champion Travel Estates. The owner is Valerie Champion. She's been a great supporter of Vertical, and she has some great specials going on, especially to Cuba. So I know you want to take a cruise to Cuba. It's a 7 nights, and so she had dates of October 30th through to December 25th. So you want to give her a call at 678-949-1416, or you can go to her website, which is championstravelescape.com, or email her at travelchampionstyle@gmail.com. So today I'm excited because we are interviewing Vanta M. Black. She is the author, and we're talking about her new book today, which is Oubliette, A Forgotten Little Place. And if you'd like to know what Oubliette means, it's a secret dungeon with access only through a trapdoor in its ceiling. And this book was partly inspired by some true historic events. So let me give you one before I introduce you to Vanta. During the 1920s, the Oubliette at Leap Castle, one of Ireland's most famous haunted castles, was unearthed. And the remains of over 150 bodies were rolled out in a wheelbarrow. And there was a pocket watch from the mid-1800s, and that revealed how recent that Oubliette had claimed victims. So for those of you who love thrillers and epic adventures and mysteries, this is the book for you. So I'd like to bring on our guest, Vanta. Hello, Vanta. How are you today?
Celeste, hi, I am fabulous. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, yes, I'm excited to talk to you about this book. And especially, I lived in Ireland for a while, so I know where Leap Castle is. This is going to be so interesting. When I was reading your press release, and I did go through the book a little bit, and I was like, oh, okay, this is a book that's going to really interest those that are interested in the haunted castle. So tell me a little bit about your background, Vanta. Where are you from?
I'm in Southern California and originally from the Midwest. And it's one of those things where you write about what you know. So when you're reading Oubliette, the main characters, the two sisters, Veronica and Nikki, are actually loosely based on myself and my own sister. So I've taken a lot of, obviously, creative freedom in giving them backstories and making them a little bit, quote unquote, larger than life. But that's kind of my mentality. I've always felt like I've been a little bit of an outsider, a little bit of an introvert, but yet at the same time I have, you know, this underlying creativity that I was never quite able to get out there in much the same way that the main character is. Veronica is an interior decorator, and she gets lured to this castle in France. And so, yeah, that's kind of who I am. I've always just been very fascinated by the unknown. I've been drawn to stories about ghosts and things that go bump in the night. Yet at the same time, I'm very much a skeptic about these things. I'm curious. I want to know, but I'm of the mindset that it needs to be proven.
Oh, okay, okay. So now we know that you're a bit of a dreamer. So I can imagine you at, I was reading some, so I can imagine you at the age of 10 probably finding you a nice little spot and just having great daydreams and creating stories in your mind. Is that something that kind of made you, pushed you toward becoming a writer?
Yes, I've always been able to kind of play out scenarios in my head. I've always wanted to tell stories. And with Oubliette, A Forgotten Little Place, you talked a little bit about Leap Castle in the beginning. And when I found out about Leap Castle, I was watching some documentary on it, and they talked about how they had emptied out all of those people, and it just struck me that there was a story behind each death, each person who ended up meeting their fate inside of this terrible, awful oubliette had some kind of a situation that got them there. And that's where that imagination just started running wild. So I did a lot of research. Historical references that take place inside of oubliette are all thoroughly researched. And I made up a fictitious castle in France, actually, and that has an oubliette. And the book is about all of these intertwining stories from different periods in history that center around this oubliette, and then those two sisters are the modern-day storyline that kind of just pulls everything all together.
So what did it feel like? You know, you did go to Lieppe Castle in Ireland. What was your first impression?
It was, let me tell you, Celeste, it was one of those moments in your life where you just sit there and go, oh, I felt like I was meant to be there. Like I needed to go there. Because of the fact that it served as that inspiration for me, I needed to see the oubliette myself. I needed to experience that environment. And this castle, I mean, there's a lot of castles in Ireland and in all of Europe that are open to the public. They have tours, and you pay, you know, 12 euro and you can go on a guided tour. This one is a private residence. The owner of Lieppe Castle, Sean Ryan, I actually ended up getting in touch with them and basically invited myself over. I was like, I'm writing this book, and your oubliette inspired it. It's the foundation for, you know, all of these stories that I'm writing. Can I come and visit you? Is that okay? Does that sound weird? And he said, no, I have people that occasionally want to come and visit. So he invited me over. And when we were there, he was just so warm and inviting. He's a musician, so he played some music for us. And my husband and my daughter were with me. And we just were able to take in, just soak in this incredible atmosphere. And if you've, one of the things that I love about Europe and Ireland and the UK in general is that everything there has such rich history. It goes back so far.
Yes, it does.
And when you're in...
That's what I love about it.
I know, right? It's just, like, you can feel that energy. And being inside that castle with all that history, it was just really a magnificent experience.
Well, you know, I did a little bit of research on a oubliette, too, and I was kind of like, you know what, look, it had to be pretty creepy when you think about a dungeon that you throw people in from the top, and that, you know, and it's, and I went, and then when I was reading a few of your excerpts, and I thought about, oh my goodness, how would that feel being thrown in there, and there's already dead bodies in there. It's like, it just has to be the just most awful, so when you saw it, what did you think? So, and talking about energy, so I mean, going there and actually seeing it, I mean, just how, what did you think when you saw it?
So here's the setup. The oubliette at Lieppe Castle is actually inside what's known as the Bloody Chapel, and it's up several stories. So the guide took us up this winding staircase, and it was old stone, and there was spiders and creepy crawlies in the wall. It had this aroma like dust and old things with just a hint of, you know, something kind of sinister underneath. And we were in the Bloody Chapel, which has this gorgeous view, actually, because Lieppe Castle is situated up kind of on a crest, because it gives you that vantage point where you can see for miles to protect from invaders, which was why it was built there way, way back in the day. So you see these just stunning green rolling hills and greenery. And then off in the corner is this little, like, grotto, like a little square space. And you look down, and actually the oubliette, you have to go, you have to walk on this little ledge a little bit, and then whoosh, it goes down. So when I was able to kind of peer into that, and, you know, just the thinking about people who really did perish there, you know, and like what you were saying, to be thrown in there and you're literally laying on the bones of people who have gone there before. You know what your fate is and what they did. Why this was such a gruesome form of torture and imprisonment is they throw you down there. Many times the fall itself would hurt you or injure you. In some cases, in some oubliettes, they even had spikes on the bottom
that
might impale you or poke you. Yeah, when you fell down.
Oh, gosh. It
wasn't a very pleasant experience at all. But then there you are down there, no food, no water for many days, but you can hear and smell everything that is going on inside the castle. So specifically with the Bloody Chapel, they would throw feasts up there and have parties while the victims were just 15, 20 feet below, listening and hearing and knowing everything that was going on just a few feet away, but there was no way that they could ever get to it.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Oh, my goodness. Well, let me ask you, so, you know, the story takes place over, you know, quite a few elements in the story, and we go back and forth to Veronica. Give us some more insight into Veronica. Why is she so special?
She is special because she's on the verge of losing everything. She's a very talented interior decorator. And from an early age, shortly after graduating from college, she did an internship with a moderately successful interior decorator, Robert. And she ended up really becoming the driving force behind that business, and she built it up. It was her design. So it was her creativity that really got the company noticed. And when it came to the point where the company was about to get major media exposure and do something fabulous, Robert, being the cad that he was, just kind of pushed her to the side and let some junior designers basically take the spotlight. And so she had it, and she branched out on her own to create her own firm, and it was failing miserably. She was the creative person, but she wasn't that schmoozer. She wasn't the salesperson. She wasn't able to really drum up business for herself. And when she gets this late-night call from this mysterious woman named Marie Claire, who invites her to come to this castle in France to decorate it, it is literally her last chance. It's like her saving grace because it's going to pull her out of debt. It's going to get her notice for her work. It's absolutely the opportunity of a lifetime. And so she brings her sister with her. Her sister happens to be a French teacher, so she figures, well, I can bring Nikki with. She can help be, you know, my translator and kind of, you know, be a helper on the project. And while they're there, Veronica, you know, and I think there's a little bit of Veronica in all of us, especially women like yourself, Celeste, and women who are just, you know, we are driving forces. We want to work. We want to get things done. We're organized. We step up to the plate. So Veronica is so focused on getting this castle done that these kind of mysterious stories and things that start happening around her, she's oblivious to it. She's even oblivious to the hot banker, Christoph, who, she thinks he's cute and she's attracted to him, but she's just like, I don't have time for that, you know? It just sets her up for this situation where, you know, things are able to unfold around her and she has a lot of ignorance to it just because she's so focused on what she feels, quote unquote, needs to get done.
Great. Well, tell us about why it, you know, because tell us a little bit about the dawn of Reformation to give our readers kind of a sense of the timeline, the Inquisition and the dawn of Reformation. Can you give us a little information about that?
Absolutely. So this fictitious French castle with its oubliette has different storylines. These are those mysterious stories that kind of start circling around Veronica. And the one during the time of the Reformation, that's actually Dorothea's story. And Dorothée is this young, very impressionable bride. She was married off to a man twice her age, and she's brought to the castle, and she's all of a sudden in this world where, oh, I'm in charge. You know, she's 16, 17 years old, and she doesn't quite understand how important and the responsibility that comes when you are the lady of a house. She's kind of snotty, and she's manipulative.
Wow.
She likes playing games. And when her husband takes off to go fight in the wars and fight on behalf of the church and the king, she is kind of taken with this mysterious prisoner who is kept in the tower room of the castle.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to give away too much, but her interest...
Don't give away too much.
Yeah, she kind of does something she shouldn't have, and she gets caught. So that's
oh, my
the
goodness.
Story
okay.
that's set during that time period. Yeah, and
okay.
all of the stories have, you know, let's face it, there's stories about people who meet their demise inside the oubliette. So each story something, somebody ends up there, and that's the horror and the fun of it.
So who is your favorite character and why?
I think my favorite is Josette Camille, and her storyline is set during the French Revolution. And I got to tell you, Celeste, when I first wrote this storyline, I almost took it out of the book because I felt it just wasn't there. It wasn't good. It wasn't mysterious. I felt it was just so plain and blasé. And then I just sat and I wrote and I rewrote, and I was inspired by people like Edgar Allan Poe and his short stories like The Telltale Heart. And I was inspired by, there's a short story called The Yellow Wallpaper about this woman who is basically being sequestered inside of this room. And the story really takes place in her mind. And with Josette Camille, she's pregnant. She's about ready to give birth to their first child. And because the French Revolution is happening, she is placed inside of the same tower room that has the oubliette. And you're questioning the entire time, is she really going mad? Or is her husband and his sister really doing these things to her? Is she hearing voices and things that are actual spirits? Is it this weird elemental type creature? She's drinking absinthe while she's in there as a tonic that's supposed to help her. So you wonder, does that have something to do with it? And so what I really love about her story is that as a reader, you never really quite know what is reality and what is in her mind and what's causing it.
Okay, that's why I like that one, okay? Now I know I understand why. you know what, because that was a favorite part in history that I read about was the French Revolution. And I would watch anything on TV that had to do with that. And I love Edgar Allan Poe, so that's probably why I really like that part. Right. Oh my goodness. Okay, so interesting. So what was some of the hardest, what was the hardest thing about writing Oubliette?
I think it was all the rewrites. Because when I started it, the concept was very loose. And because I was basing it off of all of these different ghost stories that centered around this oubliette, it was originally intended to just be several different ghost stories, and it was going to be rather light, just, you know, something fun to read. And as I started writing it, it's like I got sucked in deeper and deeper. Like I said, it's like I had to go to Lepp Castle and visit it and do more research. And then I had to go to Paris and the Loire Valley and visit some of the actual chateaus where my fictitious chateau is located. I needed to go to the Paris catacombs and actually explore this place to get a sense of what it would be like if you were inside of catacombs or inside what was essentially a massive grave. And after having these experiences, when I went back and I rewrote and I just really poured a lot of history, real experiences, and, you know, all of this real world, these real world events into it, I think that was probably the hardest part, is just writing, rewriting, and doing it again and again.
Mm-hmm. So did you have any special, like, when you were writing the book, I don't know what your experience is, but did you just write the book? Did the stories just come to you once you had done your research, or did the book in some places write itself? And I mean, I know for writers, sometimes you just get to a place where the book just kind of writes itself. And then you're like, okay, well, that, you know, I don't know where this is coming from, but what's your experience in writing it?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. In many cases, as I was writing, it just flowed. It just happened. And the stories after, you know, they were very basic. And when I was able to kind of go back and start weaving them together and making references in one storyline, so that, you know, later on you understood, oh, that thing that that little boy was carrying around, that's now in this storyline. And that diary that the one woman was writing, it's now I see. And you start kind of pulling everything together. So it definitely in many ways wrote itself. And for me, it was like I was uncovering a puzzle and kind of pulling all these pieces together so that the reader would have this experience of, oh, that's what that is. Oh, I remember that. So along the way, you're just kind of like, you know, mini surprises along the way as you're reading.
Well, did Ryan, the owner at Leap Castle, did you send him a copy?
No, I need to. I really need to. I have to do that.
It would be interesting to know what he thinks of, you know, of just that, the way you weave that story. It would just be interesting to get their reaction.
Yes, exactly.
I know nearby there's, you know, you're a brave person. I know nearby I have some friends, some good friends, and I call them family, and they're at Charlottesville Castle. And I was once over at Charlottesville in visiting, and so I remember one night we all had dinner, and they were saying, well, let's go on a tour, and we'll talk about all the ghost stories. And I'm like, no. usually when I went over there, we were still doing a lot of, you know, cleaning and restoring. So they would discover these rooms and these, you know, things out in the dungeon and the bottom and stuff like that. And I'm like, you know, it's enough in the daytime to be going in some of the rooms and just imagining, you know, all the things that went on. And then enough to, then they want me to go looking for ghosts at night. I was like, no. I remember all the ghost stories my mom told me when I was growing up. So I was like, I'm kind of like you. I'm kind of like, okay, well, you know, I do have a belief, but at the same time, it's like, you still have to show me, okay? But then there's sometimes like, I really don't want to know.
Right. When it becomes that, like, yeah, real, it's kind of like, oh, wait, that's a little too close for comfort. So that's amazing that you did that. So while you were there, did you or did anybody you were with have any kind of experiences? What did they find when they went ghost hunting?
Oh, there's a lot of experiences over at Charlottesville Castle. There's one particular story that I always like. It's kind of tragic, but you know, they have the spirit of a little girl that's seen there all the time, and quite a few people that I took some friends over there one year, and my mom, and they said that they kept seeing one of the friends that they was taking pictures outside. And so one of the daughters of our friends, she had a little girl that just used to wander all around the castle. I mean, you would see Kristen everywhere. But he would say when he was looking out the window to take pictures, he'd see this little girl. And we all would be like, okay, well, Kristen's not here today. but it was just kind of very elusive. And a couple of times I've been there, students have seen. These are people and entities that, you know, they see different people from throughout the centuries that have probably lived there or visited Charlottesville. So I, you know, going over there, there's so many stories. You know, you struck a chord when you said when you first went up to the castle, because that's how I felt when I first saw Charlottesville. You know, all the stories you grew up with, and you know, I'm a mythology fan since I was a little kid, and all the stories that you hear, and then when you actually step on the property, and you see the castle, and then you see these trees that are over, you know, 500 years old, and they're still living, and the energy, I really connected with you when you were talking about that, because that's exactly how I felt when I was over there. It's a beautiful, like you said, it's so many stories in Europe and in Ireland. I know, and being in Ireland, everywhere you go, you see towers and old cottages and, you know, castles, and it's just an amazing place. So your story was just really one that I really connected with, knowing all the different, you know, wars that went on and families and the cruel things that happened. And you're telling me about the Oubliette at Leap and talking about how that is, and you're down in there with all these bones, and you're listening to people alive above you and around you while you're slowly dying. That has to be awful.
Yes, not a good time. Yeah, exactly.
Most definitely. Well, let's talk about your ambitions for writing, though. You know, what are you working on now? Are you working on a new book, or are you going to work on a series for this?
Yes, there is a new book in the works.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And, yes, the Oubliette is definitely set up for part two. So that is being worked on right now. I'm very excited, too, that I've joined forces with Prophecy Girl Films, and we're turning Oubliette, or we're in the beginning process of adapting it for episodic television. So our fingers are crossed there that we might actually see the story on TV. And yeah, between those two projects and just really having fun talking with fans, I'm doing book festivals and events and author panels. That's basically what I've been up to.
Well, you must be very excited, though, the opportunity to even make this into a series. I mean, and when you're talking about that, I'm just thinking, like, because, you know, I could see this on Netflix or Hulu or something just as a continuing series, and I'm like, wow, that has to be amazing for you.
It is. It's like a dream come true. It's just overwhelmingly just wow. I'm having such a great time.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Well, what actress would you have play Veronica?
That's a good question.
Who would you like to see?
Veronica, let me think about that a second. I think a good Veronica might be Emily Van Camp. Might be good. She kind of a Renee Zellweger, maybe a slightly younger Renee Zellweger. She kind of, you know, she has that appeal where you're rooting for her, but she also kind of like with Bridget Jones's Diary, where she just kind of makes mistakes and she's not quite as polished as you would anticipate her to be. She's just, you know, she's a little bit quirky like that.
Good choice. Yeah. So what are your ambitions for your future in writing?
I love writing, and I just want to be able to do more of it. In addition to the second part of Oubliette, I actually have a couple of other stories in mind that I want to get down. Mm-hmm. I love, as much as this is more like a thriller / horror novel, I've also always been drawn to sci-fi. And I love when sci-fi and horror meet. So I have a couple of ideas there that I might be publishing soon too.
Are you a Sci-Fi Channel fan?
I do like the Sci-Fi Channel, and I love how sci-fi kind of, the genre itself gives you so many possibilities, and in most cases, it's really a statement about society and about our attitudes, so I think there's a lot of possibility when you start taking on sci-fi.
Who's your favorite author?
Ooh. That's a hard question. I have so many that I admire. I love Anne Rice, Stephen King, Richard Matheson, actually, if you want to go back. Some of the classics, Edgar Allan Poe, Lovecraft, Mary Shelley. She really started the entire genre with sci-fi and horror with Frankenstein. Yeah, and I love a lot of contemporary modern day. I like fantasy as well. Rowling obviously is great. George R. R. Martin. I basically I feel like I run the gamut. There's so many fabulous writers and great talent out there. I'm a fan of a lot of them.
Well, let's talk about your let's talk a little bit about your writing style. I think I would say. So, do you work better with an outline or a plot, or are you one of those writers that, you know, you kind of get inspired and you just kind of take off from there?
I would like to think that I'm that organized writer that has the outline and kind of puts it all together. And I will do that, but then I totally go off script. It's like I said, what we were talking about before, it starts, the story starts to kind of write itself. And I feel like I start going down these little rabbit holes where it's like, oh, that wasn't the plan, but wait, this is more fun. This is better anyway. So I guess I'm a little bit of both.
What is the easiest thing for you about writing?
The easiest thing about writing? Wow. I don't know if it's easy, but one of my favorite things to do is I love to just put my writing aside, at least for a few days, sometimes several weeks, and then just go sit in a coffee shop or maybe in a public place, a park, with my laptop. And sometimes I'll print it out, too, and reread it. And looking at it through the eyes of somebody who is reading it for the first time, I kind of pull myself away from being a writer for a second to being a reader so that I can really maximize that experience for the reader. That's probably my, I don't know if that's the easiest thing, but it's one of my favorite things to do, actually.
Well, you know, before I get too much further, tell me a little bit about who designed your book cover, because I'm going to tell you, it's one that, especially because I went to your website, and I, you know, you see that hand and that nail, and it's like, okay, just... it's intriguing, and it's intriguing, it's scary, but it's interesting. So who designed that cover? Who came up with that idea?
Well, that was actually me. And the hand that you see is my hand. What we did, I had a very specific visual in mind of, first it was two hands reaching out from the oubliette. And so I had my husband take a picture of exactly what I wanted the hands to look like. And then I took that picture and I sketched them. And then somewhere in the process I realized the one hand was much more impactful than the two hands. And so I actually, that was a little hobby of mine for quite a while. I sketched it, and then I put it into Photoshop, and I kind of filled it in, and I gave it that hyper-realistic look that you see.
Okay. Because it's very effective.
Oh, thank you.
It really is. I'm a graphic person. You know, as well, I used to paint and stuff, and so when I look at book covers now, it's always It's always fun to look at book covers and see if you get a real feeling for the book, or if the mm-hmm. cover really gives you, you know, what the book is going to give you after you read it. But it was very, when I saw your book cover in the beginning, it was something that made me want to read it. So I really love the cover.
Thank you.
So do you think covers play an important part when you're looking for a book?
I do. That old saying that you can't judge a book by its cover is wrong.
Uh-huh.
Because
okay.
we do. I think everybody, mm-hmm. especially nowadays when you're shopping, whether you're on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, or maybe you're on a site and you're looking at lots of different books within your genre, I think that
uh-huh.
just the ones that pop out and grab your attention, that's what you're going to focus on. And even with
mm-hmm.
Oubliette, it has the hand, but I made,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to make Oubliette stand out. I wanted it to look rather minimalistic in a sea
okay.
of busy book covers, because a lot of times, especially online, you might see just a little itty-bitty thumbnail. So I wanted the
uh-huh.
Oubliette, I wanted the cover to pop against other books that might be really busy or intricate.
Interesting. Okay. So I know we have a lot of writers that listen to this program, and especially a lot of writers that are up and coming. So I always like to get as much information from the writers. It's always interesting to see. It's almost always interesting to hear writers what they do and what their process is, because it's always something different. I think the other thing too is that I'm learning. Even in my interviews, I know some people will say, oh, you know, it took me a month to write a book. And some people say, well, it took me 10 years to write a book. so
mm-hmm.
How long did it take you to write Oubliette?
I'm on that 10-year list. It took me about 10 years to write it. It was a very long process.
Wow.
I admire writers that can go faster, but I can't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was
mm-hmm.
very, very... very daunting when I think back on it, but also very rewarding.
Well, yeah, I think too, because I think the enjoyable part of it is the fact that you bring in a lot of history.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I like, you know, to me it gives the book a little bit more meat, because it does have those historic periods that really do match with, you know, the story, you know, overall. So that's the part that, you know, I like. So, you know, no way, you know, you maybe it depends on the time that you have, but I think that the time that you spent really is telling in the book. It's really telling that you put a lot of effort into their research.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put a lot of effort into making it a really nice, great story, you know, not too historic, not too, you know, anything. It's a great story. So, tell me, do you like e-books? Do you prefer e-books versus traditional paperback books or hardbacks? So, like, when you like to go somewhere and just have a book and read, what is it that you like to do? Do you like to do the e-books or the traditional books?
Oh, actually, I love listening to books.
Oh, good.
I am a fan of being able to, well, living in Southern California, obviously there's always a lot of traffic, so
right.
I'll listen
mm-hmm.
in traffic. When I'm exercising
mm-hmm.
and doing my yoga, I'll listen, or if I'm cooking. It's just, I love having a book on basically in the background.
Mm-hmm.
I do read as well, and I do
mm-hmm.
have, I run the gamut. I love, nothing's
mm-hmm.
better than the feeling of a real book in your hand and the smell of the paper and being able to hold it. But I do have books on my e-reader as well. So I'm a little bit of everything, mm-hmm. but if I have to pick, I love being able to sit back and listen to a book. And sometimes with the narrators, and the way it's produced nowadays, it really gives you a whole different flavor and experience to the reading process.
Yes, I love listening to them as well, because a lot of times when I'm working or you know, the way I was introduced to audiobooks was actually I did a lot of cross-country traveling, and there was this neat little truck stop we stopped at, and they had this little carousel of books on tape. And I was like, oh, interesting, because I'm like, I never heard of that. This was years ago before it got real popular. And I remember we got a tape. You could actually rent the tape, and then you can check it back in at the next truck stop is how it went. And and when you said Anne Rice, that was great, because I first heard Anne Rice on an audio tape, and I heard a couple of other authors that now their books are movies. I heard those on tape, and it was the best cross-country trip.
Right.
And all we did was listen. Yeah, we just listened to books all the way, and it was actually great. but like you, I like sometimes I'll read my ebook, and sometimes I'll read a paperback. So I think it is just, but I do, like you said, because in our world is getting so busy, that we're trying to do so much in short amount of time. And those books on tape actually, the books, audio books actually are pretty cool. You had some wonderful reviews for this book. Wonderful reviews. What do you do to get book reviews? Is there anything special that you do to get them, or do you just depend on your marketing process to get the book sold and people will write the reviews?
A little bit of everything. There's a service called NetGalley, which you might be aware of, and it's almost all authors and publishers use it to basically offer up the book for honest reviews. So I've gotten a lot of great NetGalley reviews. I have, a lot of real authentic reviews where people, who have read it, and, that's the best thing, when somebody reads the book, they buy it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or whatever, and then they review it. And then there's another service that we went through called Reader's Favorite, and we got five-star reviews from them, which is just fabulous. We even got the five-star logo from them. So it's there's a variety of different ways that we've gotten the reviews. Because, and you touched on it, the reviews are a great form of marketing, because people like to be able to, see what other people have said and experienced, and, what their thoughts are on not only books, but I think any product. We'd like to know what people, think of it before we actually make that purchase.
What do you think is the percentage of time that you spend on doing your marketing for your books?
Well, right now I spend a lot of time doing my marketing, just because it's at that stage where, and this time of the year, with it being Halloween, it's, it's the perfect time for a book like mine.
It is the perfect time, yes.
It is. So the last few weeks and up until the end of the month, between doing events, interviews like this, and the contests as well. We're giving away copies of the book on Goodreads and Amazon and all these different platforms. So we've just got a lot going on right now. I'd estimate on any given day, I probably spend 2 to 3 hours just doing marketing and publicity for the book.
How effective do you think your social media marketing is for your book?
I love social media, and I am using Facebook. I like to play around, too. So I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, YouTube, and I've dabbled even with a few other platforms as well, such as Tumblr. I love social media. I think that's where people congregate. That's where people hang out. It's really interesting, too, because each platform lends itself to a different type of audience and a different way that you do your promotion. Twitter, for example, is very much like, hey, check this out. Hey, here's a link. Go here. It's very just fast-paced, whereas on Facebook, I'm connecting with fans, and we have conversations, and it feels a little bit more robust. So, I love social media. I think it's very necessary for writers and authors to be on it. and, you know, just experiment and try different things. You can do ads, you can do boosted posts, you can do a lot of different things with social media.
Wonderful. Well, for those of you that are listening, again, we're talking to Vanta M. Black. She is the author of Oubliette, A Forgotten Little Place. And we're going to get back to asking her more questions, but just so you know, we will be having this interview, and we will have an article in Vertical Life magazine. And you can find Vanta's website at www.vantamblack.com. So you can check out her. She has a great website, so check out her website. And I want to go back to a couple of more questions with Vanta. I hope you're enjoying our show. So Vanta, let me ask you this. So I want to ask you a few of your favorites. What is your favorite thing to do when you're just relaxing?
I love this time of the year because I can light a fire in the fireplace and snuggle up with either some cocoa or maybe some tea and either reading or writing, whether I'm reading somebody else's work or writing for myself. I think that's, to me, the definition of perfection, is just that cozy kind of visceral environment where you can just curl up enjoy this time of the year. That's my favorite thing.
Wonderful. So what was your favorite film and why?
My favorite film? Excellent question. I have so many and it fluctuates. I would say right now, my favorite film, I'm just going to go with a classic, Alien, the movie Alien. And it's because, kind of what I was talking about before, it's horror and sci-fi combined, and it was so expertly done, and I loved the female protagonist and the fear and the terror that it evoked, and it was so cutting edge when it was done. And there's been so many who have come afterwards to try to duplicate that same experience. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the movie Alien.
Okay. Where do you see yourself, though, in the next 5 years? Where do you see yourself?
In 5 years, it would be great if by that time I had a couple more books under my belt, Oubliette second and maybe third book, and it would be fabulous to be watching it on TV. That's the dream.
And do you have any more trips scheduled to go out the country?
Not at this moment, though I do have a dear friend who is in France right now, and she had wanted me to come visit her. She actually, when I went to visit the first time, she took me around and was able to give me tours, and we explored the catacombs together. So even though I wasn't able to... It was so good. even though I didn't hook up with her this time, I'm thinking maybe in the spring, a trip to France is another.
Well, that would be great. So I'm going to ask you your advice for up-and-coming writers, but first I would like to ask you, what would your advice to yourself would have been, to your younger self, what advice would you have given yourself?
My advice to myself would have been to just go forward faster and stronger and bolder. I questioned myself so many times along the way, and I would put my writing aside because I felt it wasn't good enough. I felt insecure, and I didn't know what I was doing, and all of those doubts would eat away at me, and I'd be like, I'm crazy. I'm never going to publish a book, you know? And those voices really, when I say the book took 10 years, part of the reason is because I would set it aside because I didn't think it was going to be good enough. And frankly, I probably was my own worst enemy because I stood in my own way. So if I could go back in time to when I first started writing, I would say, just do it. You're going to do it. You're going to finish it. Just do it boldly and be strong and seize it, you know. Take ownership of it.
Fantastic. And what advice would you give to an aspiring writer?
I think the same thing. Just do it. Just write. I love the process of writing. Don't be afraid that it's not good enough. It gets better and better. And you need to explore that. You need to write in order to be a writer. It's one of the reasons, if you don't mind me really quick, I can tell you a little bit about the Ooh La La Oubliette fan fiction contest that we're doing. That's part of the reason is to encourage writers to just go for it. I love fan fiction. I love the idea of just giving over the concept, the story, or any story, and people who have enjoyed it to be able to write their own version or take off in a different direction. And with the fan fiction contest, we're actually giving away a trip to France, because I feel like, wouldn't it be cool if somebody could explore just like I did when I was able to go to the Paris Catacombs and the Loire Valley? So
that is
my
fantastic
advice. Thank you. It's just do it. Just start.
I love that. Yeah, I love that. I used to do, I've been to Ireland several times for part of it. Part of it was researching family history, and part of it was just going and hanging with my friends. My kids like to joke that that's the only place where I go out and just get drunk. So I said,
awesome.
I always tell them, you know, and I always say, because it's a safe environment. But, you know, it's amazing that you said that, because I, you know, one of the things I did when I was doing academic advisement, and I was doing it for young individuals that wanted to be teachers, and I would say, you know, the best thing you could do for yourself before you start college is to go overseas. Go experience another country. Go experience another, you know, perspective. Go and it's kind of funny, because I, you know, that's how I got my calling. I mean, being able to go over there and just really kind of feel like, oh my goodness, you know, I belong here. And so I love that you're doing that, because I would love to see more young writers be inspired to go to Europe. Like you said, it's such a rich heritage over there that you can still see. And that's what I love about it, that you can still see. That's great. I mean, we have some great things here in America, but I think we take them a little bit for granted. But then again, you know, there are things that you're going to see. You know, I kind of say, you know, you're going to see it if you're depending on where you live. There's rich heritage there. But just going to Europe just does something different. I think that's a great contest. I will be looking forward to finding out who's going to end up going, you know, to France. What a great place to go to. So that's fantastic. So tell me, what is one of your favorite motivational phrases or positive saying that you like to think about and you like to use?
A motivational phrase? Oh, my.
And it can be your own phrase. What gets you going?
There's a phrase, it might sound a little bit cliche, but it always resonates with me. And it's basically, go out and build your dream. Otherwise, somebody is going to hire you to build theirs. And it's
my goodness, that's great.
Yeah, isn't it? I mean, excuse me. It's this idea that if you've got a dream and if you want to chase something, you've got to do it, and you've got to do it for yourself. And it goes back to that, you know, those barriers that we'll put up in front of ourselves where we say, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not talented enough, I don't have the time for this. You know, it's really easy for people to just become complacent and say, oh, you know what, I got this great job and I'm making, you know, a lot of money and I got health insurance and a 501K. And I can do, you know, I can just be, quote unquote, just like everybody else, because that's what we do, and I'm going to work for this company, and that's fine. And if that is really their dream, it is fabulous. But if you have something that you want, if you aspire to be, whether it's your own boss, a writer, somebody who's creative who maybe wants to be an actor or an artist or a musician, you got to chase that. The last thing you want is to be 85 years old and look back and say, oh, you know what? I used to play guitar, but everybody told me that I could never make money doing it and I'd never be famous. So when I was 18, I put it down so that I could go work at, you know, the local grocery store. That's not what you want your memories to be. You know, if you try and you fail, at least you tried. But I think failure is a very subjective term. You know, decide for yourself what is your definition of success. If success is just doing it, then you are going to succeed because as long as you do it, you're going to accomplish that goal.
Fantastic. Fantastic, Vanta. Thank you for that. I love what you said. That's really great, and it's really inspirational. And I know young writers who may be listening or anyone that's listening that you have a dream that definitely this is something you can really think about. I always believe that everyone has the potential of doing what it is that they really want to do, that thing that challenges you and scares you and at the same time excites you. I'm like, I'm all for that one. I'm all for that choice. So you have an event coming up, and I have to tell you, I love Stan Lee, but you have an event coming up October 28th through the 30th, Stan Lee's Kamikaze Expo. Can you give me a little idea, like, where is that taking place? And I see the host is going to be Stan Lee and Elvira.
Yeah, it's Stan Lee's Kamikaze. It's a huge festival, a huge con, I should say, very similar to Comic-Con, but it's put on by Stan Lee and Elvira, who, can I just say, I love Elvira. She really is a role model.
I know.
totally looking forward to being there. And it's happening at the Los Angeles Convention Center. And it's not just authors and people like me, but it's like this pop culture festival. So you have comic books and authors and actors and creatives, artists. A lot of it revolves around, you know, superheroes and those types of worlds as well as fantasy. So it's a little bit of everything. So, yeah, if you like comics, if you like horror, if you like pop culture, this is definitely the place for you. And, yep, we're going to be there and very much looking forward to it.
Oh, my goodness, that's going to be so exciting. You know, that it's just so exciting. I might have an opportunity to with you in the future. I would love to meet you. This has been a wonderful interview. And it's going to be, you know, I'm just going to be looking forward to everything that you're doing, especially with this book. It's really exciting. So I really, really want to thank you for coming on today and giving us that great review of the book, your inspiration, and your content. It's been so great. And hopefully, you know, definitely please email me more information about your contest. I would love to add that to this interview on Vertical Life Magazine as well. You know, I would just say, it's just been great. If you're looking how to get in touch with Vanta, be looking for the information that we post. We will post her website and give you the information of where to get her book as well. And I think you know, if you love this genre, you have to get this book. Seriously, you really do. I mean, it's a book you won't be able to put down. So you're really gonna love it. And Vanta Kit, I would appreciate, just hold on the line for a second after we finish the show. I'd like to get a few points for you. Again, this has been A Taste of Ink, and we've had Vanta M. Black. She is the author of The Oubliette, A Forgotten Little Place. It's been great. I really appreciate our supporters and our listeners. If you'd like to submit program recommendation or music for airplay, contact us at liveradio@verticallifemagazine.com. Again, this is Celeste Duckworth, your host, and we have been talking to Vanta M. Black, author of Oubliette, A Forgotten Little Place. Thank you today. Have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye.